Pratibodhitam Bhagavata Narayanena Swayam Vyasena Kritam Purana Munina Madhye Mahabharatam Advaitamritavarshinim Bhagavatim Ashtadashadhyayinim Ambatvamanusandhatami Bhagavad Gita Bhavadvaishini.
So we're on verse 18, chapter 15.
Yasmat kshiram atitoham, yasmat kshiram atitoham, aksharad apichotamaha, atosmi loke vedecha, pratitav purushottamaha, pratitav purushottamaha. Yasmat ksharam atitaha aham aksharat api cha uttamaha. Verse 18. Do you find it?
Yeah.
Yasmat ksharam atitaha aham aksharat api cha uttamaha ataha asmi loke vede cha pratitaha purusha uttamaha. Purusha uttamaha is purusha uttamaha. In verse 16, he introduced the concepts of the words kshara and akshara, kshara purusha and akshara purusha. And in verse 17, he talked about uttama purusha. So in this verse, he's going to talk about the use of the word for the uttama purusha of purushottama. So let's just review these terms. Purusha really means the one who is purnam, the one who is absolutely full. Also the one who is purishete, the one who is sleeping or abiding in the puri, in the city of the deha, in the city of the body. They're talking about the atma, the self, the pratyagatma, that innermost self, which in fact is the purushottama. So here, let's look at these. Purusha. So purusha means that one who is purnam, who is infinite, that one who is indwelling here in the seven-gated city of the deha. So puri, you know, puri means city. Okay. So in the city of the body. So this is the word meaning for purusha. So it's a meaning for the atma, the self. Purusha means really, it's referring to the atma, the self, which is limitless. So now we have for this atma, this purusha.
Excuse me a second.
Oh yeah, sorry. Yeah.
Thanks.
Okay.
Thank you.
So, so if we were to just in modern day parlance, just in speaking in vyavahara, kind of in empirical reality, purusha means a person. But the person we're talking about is the uttama purusha. Uttama purusha means that purusha which is supreme. Supreme means that purusha which is not limited, that being which is not limited but limited by time, space, or object. That object means it's not one object or another. There's no object that can limit it. It's not limited by space, not limited by time. So we have that desha kala vastu aparichedha. It's not aparichedha, not limited by desha, space, kala, time, vastu, objects. It's not one object or another. Here in Vyavahara, in this empirical reality, every object is limited by all the objects which it is not. Even space is limited in the sense that space is not earth, water, fire, water, earth. So everything in the creation is limited by the diversity or the duality of the creation. the Purushottama, the Purusha, which is the Atma, which is the self, the Pratyagatma, that innermost self, is not limited by anything, is not limited by duality. Duality, this Dvaita includes time and space. Time and space is one of the five elements, and change is responsible for time. Without change, there is no such a thing as time. So time and space belong to duality. Just to make that clear, a lot of times we don't think of space as being something. But if you have an imagination or if you have a dream, the five elements come, including space. Space, air, fire, water, earth are part of the creation. It's not like there's space and then the creation takes place within space. Space itself is part of the creation. Within duality, there's change. So time and space, both of these concepts belong to the manifest creation. So, for instance, when when the dream comes, the time and space come along with the other elements and all of the elementals. When we use the term elementals, in Sanskrit we'd say like the Bhutas or the Bhautikas, those things that come from the five elements. Combination of the five elements, those are the elementals. So this whole duality that we look at as something, the Srishti, Stiti, Laya. Srishti is the creation, Stiti is the sustenance, right? The maintaining of the creation, and Laya is the dissolution of the creation. We look at this Stiti, this Srishti, Stiti, Laya, as being beginningless, as being cyclical. So now think about this. If we look at the creation, or if the Vedas view the creation as being something which is cyclical, that means it comes into manifestation and then resolves into unmanifest condition. Okay? The manifest condition is what we call the Kshara Purusha. Kshara. Kshara means that which changes. That which is subject to birth and death is kshara. So the manifest creation that includes both Hiranyagarbha and Virat, which means it includes the subtle, everything subtle, and everything physical. The sukshma sharira, the subtle body, and the stula sharira, the physical body. This sukshma sharira, I'm just trying to give you your Sanskrit terms so you start to remember them, if you don't, for those of you who are newer. Sukshma sharira, the subtle body, there's a subtle body for the jiva, for the individual. There's a total sukshma sharira, a subtle body for the whole creation that we call Hiranyagarbha. There's a stula sharira, a physical body for the individual, you know, for the jiva. And there's a, what we call a sameshti, a total stula sharira, physical body, that we call virat. So this is Ishvara. So when we're looking at the purusha, the Pratyagatma, the Atma, which is Brahman, just pure conscious being. When we're looking at it from the standpoint of the total physical upadi, this manifest creation on the physical level that we call Virat, this whole, if we look at the Purusha from that which is manifest, Hiranyagarbha on the subtle level and Virat on the physical level, we call that the Kshara Purusha. So we're looking at Brahman encased in this particular upadi. The upadi, the conditioning adjunct of the manifest creation on the subtle and physical level. We call the purusha, the atma, the self, from the standpoint of what we call karana sharira, the causal body. Right? The causal body, that's the akshara purusha. So purusha, from its own standpoint, is called the Uttama Purusha. So the Uttama Purusha means that Purusha, the self, which is free from, beyond, superior to, more subtle than, Uttama, right? Which is free from, transcendent to, the Kshara Purusha and the Akshara Purusha. Means it's the same self, it's the same Purusha, but from the standpoint of the physical world, it's being viewed from the standpoint of that upadi, means the total creation. If I look at this total creation as a conscious being that the total creation enjoys is the Uttama Purusha. In reality, the truth of this whole creation, the self, the conscious being of the whole creation, is the Purusha, which from its own standpoint is Uttama Purusha. That means from its own standpoint, the Purusha, the conscious being, is totally free of anything that that anything that exists within the manifest or unmanifest creation. The manifest and unmanifest creation are Maya. There's something which the unmanifest creation also is Maya, because it's sattva, rajas, and tamas. It's something that comes into manifestation and goes into unmanifest condition, but that unmanifest condition is other than conscious being. Conscious being doesn't come into manifest condition and unmanifest condition. Conscious being is always just conscious being. It doesn't go through any modification. And so when we have these three terms, it's really like the Mandukya Upanishad. We have these three terms, we look at this entire physical creation, the whole manifest, let's say the whole manifest creation, subtle and physical. If I look at conscious being from the me, from the standpoint of the whole creation, I'll call myself the Kshara Purusha, the Purusha, the self that is continually going through change. But that requires the Maya Upadhi, right? That Maya conditioning adjunct on a physical level. The unmanifest, the Akshara, the unmanifest condition is not really going through change at all. It's the constant. It's there from beginningless time. But that, when it goes into manifestation, the things that are manifest are subject to continual birth and death. So when we say, so now these three terms, Kshara Purusha is looking at the Purusha from the standpoint of the manifest creation as a conditioning adjunct, an upadhi. Akshara Purusha is looking at the causal condition, the unmanifest condition of the creation, which is just Maya. This is what we call Ishwara, really. It's the Maya upadhi and unmanifest condition. That's called the Akshara Purusha. Now I'm looking at the Atma, the self, from the standpoint of the Maya upadhi, which is in unmanifest condition. That's called Akshara. It means it's not subject to change. It's beginningless. So understand that this beginningless Maya, which is not going to go away, the beginningless Maya, which is in a manifest condition, comes in the manifestation. When it's in manifestation, everything manifest, everything in it is continually changing. But that Maya goes into unmanifest condition. So that unmanifest condition is something that never goes away. In other words, it is as beginningless as Brahman is timeless. So that's why it's called Akshara. When you put that Akara, the letter A, in front of a Sanskrit word that begins with a consonant, it negates it. So Kshara means that which is subject to change, it's birth and death. Akshara, that which is not subject to change. So Kshara Purusha, Akshara Purusha, and the Uttama Purusha is the one who abides without any change whatsoever as the very being of the Kshara, Akshara, and Kshara Purusha. See what I mean? So the one who is totally immanent as the very self of the Kshara and Akshara, but who itself goes through no change whatsoever. This is the Satya-Mitya relationship. This is the Atma, yourself, your being, the conscious me that you are, is the Uttama Purusha. Means that yourself, this me, this very personal me that you are, is something which is not subject to any type of modification whatsoever. It's not just like there's examples in the Gita, just like you can't wet space and you can't burn space. You can't throw mud at space. Space is more subtle. And so like that, the Atma, the Uttama Purusha, your being, is more subtle than even space. And so nothing can or does touch you in any way. So say if you take it on a physical level, you can't be cut and you can't be wet. You know? Nothing can happen to you. You can't be burnt, all of these things. It's not possible for the Atma, just like you can't do it with space. But on a subtle level also, you cannot be touched and are never touched. You know, you're pervasive, you're immanent and transcendent. You're immanent, you're also transcendent, which means you're pervasive to whatever the situation is. All experiences that you have, they enjoy consciousness because they're known. because they exist and they are known. But the knownness and the existence never varies. It never goes through any modification at all. And so that means also on a subtle level, which means on an emotional level also, nothing ever touches your being. That needs to be that fact needs to be recognized. It's not just words. There's something that the Upanishads want you to see about the relationship of this me, this conscious being that I am, the relationship of the conscious being with all levels of experience that I have. Physical experiences, perceptual experiences, emotional experiences, imaginal experiences, whatever experiences are taking place, they're taking place in a stable me that is never affected in any way by those experiences. Why this is so key, this is the whole Satyam Mithya, and that it's key to understanding Vedanta, because what this means is that in your experience, the experiences that you're having that include you, the conscious being, the me, and all of the things that you experience, that you can differentiate, no matter what the experience, the deepest, darkest, saddest experiences, and the most neutral and the most beautiful experiences, the whole spectrum of experiences, the task for you is to differentiate your being amidst all of those experiences. That is freedom. The recognition of your being, which is free and the same and present to, equally uncovered by whatever experience is there. Equally present to and uncovered by the most depressed experience. And equally present and uncovered by the most agitated experience and the most happy experience. This understanding is so different than the experience, the understanding that we usually come to this knowledge with, which is looking at the continuum of all of the experiences that we're capable of having, from the deep, darkest, most awful, to the most sublime, meditative, blissful, happy experience. And we think, so we're going back and forth through all of these, and we think that moksha, or liberation, means that is the ending up on this end of the spectrum, to the highest bliss imaginable, you know. And so we get glimpses of these little meditative experiences and whatnot, but they're just glimpses, and when am I just going to stay there? When am I going to stay there? You know. And the more I stay there, the more liberated I am. That's the notion that most people come to this knowledge with. That is not it. I mean, it is so not it that it's frighteningly not it. And it's also frighteningly difficult to convey this, this one particular thing. It's frighteningly difficult to convey it because we're so convinced that no matter what she says or what the Swami says, I'm still waiting for this. The self that you are is not dependent on the experiences that you have. It needs to be differentiated and recognized in every experience that you have as the constant me. It is not covered. You know, the example I love to use is just like, you know how the sun is shining, but when I'm looking up, I don't see the sun at all because the rain clouds are so thick, water is pouring, you know, the thunder and lightning are going, and I look up there and I can't see the sun. Right? But I know the sun's illuminating the rain clouds, but I can't see it. So from my standpoint, then I think, gee, the clouds have to move. I can't wait for them to move so I can be on this side of the spectrum. That's kind of the mind talking, you know. I, the mind, need the rain clouds to move so that I can have this experience, you know, of my mind seeing the sun. This is totally wrong use of this illustration. This illustration is meant to say, you're the me that you are is the sun. Your self experience, the me, the conscious me, when you say me, the one that you're talking about, even though you may not know it because you may have identified it with the body and the mind and the sense organs, but this me that you're talking about is the sun. It's the one that illumines the rain clouds, itself not changing at all, and it illumines the clear sky also. And it illumines the light wafty clouds. It itself isn't affected in any way. Right? And nor is it trying to think, let me illumine, oh, I'm going to go ahead and illumine the rain clouds, and I'll also let me light up the clear sky also. It's not thinking. It is luminosity. It is you. You are never changing. The experiences are changing. You, the me that you are, this most personal me that you are, is never affected in any way or covered. Do you think that the sun is covered by the clouds? The sun is not covered by the clouds. You are not covered by your experiences at all. And I know this is hard. It's going to be hard because, especially when we're having really painful negative experiences, we don't want those. We don't want to be hurt and depressed and agitated and sorrowful. We don't want those experiences. We want to get away from them. Fine, I don't have any problem with that either. Of course we want to get away from them, and you need to know something, and this knowledge really does help you get away from those rainy clouds. Right? But that's not what I'm saying. I'm saying your being is not covered by those rainy clouds. You don't like the rain clouds. I'm saying that you, who you are, is not covered by them. You're illumining them. You're not covered by them. And that needs to be discerned. Your nature, the one who is not covered, has to be recognized amidst whatever experiences are there. That's knowledge. And when you do recognize that, and recognize this me that you are, is the what we call Uttama Purusha, is the very source of any experience of ananda or fullness you've ever had. It is the source of it. What causes all of the rain clouds are the agitations in different levels of agitation in your mind. What causes the dukkha vrittis, the sorrowful vrittis in the mind, have to do with stress and agitation, and different types of, different levels of stress and agitation in the mind that cause it to become, take on a condition that is very different from me. And so it's not, it's painful. Pain is produced in the mind by the conditions that it takes. And the reason it takes on these stressful, tense, you know, conditions that bring about all of these negative affects that we have is because I have projected my wholeness onto the world and then I'm trying to get it back. Instead of, I don't know that the source of wholeness is my own being. The source of ananda is my own being. And my mind just requires for my mind to really enjoy that in its own way. Yeah, all it needs to do is relax. But it can't relax if it thinks that the source of the ananda is out there. The source of the happiness is out there in an object. How can it relax? You have to get the object. You know, then you have to protect the object, then you have to keep wanting the object. I mean, there's so many variables. You have no control. And you continually experience that lack of control where you keep trying to make things go your way so that then your mind actually will relax, so then you can be happy. It's very stressful, very hard to do, impossible to do. You get little moments of happiness and all of this. What if you have discovered yourself, that your mind has recognized yourself and recognizes the dynamics, the psychodynamics that are going on, you know, that has caused your mind to go through all of this anxiety and angst and sorrow? It's all just because you think that what you need to be happy is existing out here in some combination. It's existing out here somehow. And then you're in jeopardy. You just are. That's the nature. Everything out here is subject to change. You don't really have that much control. You can try, but it doesn't, you know, And there's no guarantees, and nothing lasts, and we all know that. So, of course, it's stressful. What about when your mind doesn't ask for that anymore? It's not going to not ask if you believe that the source of the ananda is out here. If I think that I need you in order, oh my beloved, in order for me to be whole, then I'm in trouble. Because, in fact, that's a lie. I need you, my loved one, to, in order for me to be happy, but I need you to be in a particular way in order for me to be happy. And so therefore, not only are you a source of happiness for me, you are a source of extreme pain because you're not always behaving in the way that I need you to behave in order to be happy. So when if that's just an example in reference to a person, in a personal relationship where, you know, where I'm so, my heart is so involved with us. But that's true for everything. So it's true for your friends. It's true for your animals. It's true for your job. It's true for your clothes. It's true for your hair. It's ridiculous, okay? That's the truth of it. What if your mind has realized that actually these things don't contain the happiness at all? That's why sometimes they cause you, give you happiness, and sometimes they don't. It means that they don't contain the happiness. They don't have anything to do with the happiness. What about when you recognize that this Uttama Purusha, your own being, is the Ananda, it is the beloved, it is the one that you've been seeking in all of these objects? How far away is that beloved from that Uttama Purusha from your mind? There is no distance. And the self that you are, the being that you are, being Uttama, means it's not an object in the world. It's not subject to time. You're not subject to space. You're not limited by any object. Your being is inviolate. And there's never, ever a time that your mind is away from that source of ananda. And so as you start to really understand that, and it takes some time because we're so conditioned, we come from lifetimes of thinking my ananda is out here. So of course, it takes time for the mind to relax in its knowledge. But once you know, then whatever goes on here, you just do your best with it. You know, and sometimes there are hard events and sometimes there are not hard events. Sometimes they're meant to make you happy, and sometimes they're difficult and meant to cause you angst and pain. But what if your well-being isn't dependent on that? That's moksha. When you recognize the freedom of yourself, that's one level. That you are the sun. That you are, your being is that changeless ananda. Not subject to any type of variation at all, that is present no matter what the experience is, period. You are always the same. Never, there's not a wavering at all, nor can there be. Say you've recognized that, and you have woken up to the beloved nature of your ever-present self. Not some big bliss experience. Beloved. The thing that is really the most dear. What if you wake up to that? That is invariable. You don't have to protect it. It is what it is. It's not going to change on you. But the quality of your mind changes. It does change. You know why? Because that mind is no longer searching for the wholeness, the well-being that it spent lifetime searching for. Let me do this, let me do that, let me have this person, let me have that person, let me have these pets, let me have this and this and this and this and this, no, this, 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 no, this, this, this. Why? So that I can be whole and complete and say all is done, all is well with me. It never works. So what about when that struggle is over? Because there is no distance between your being and your mind. There's no distance. If I send my mind to the moon, we were saying the other day, if I send my, this is in the Kato, I think, if I send my mind to the moon, I'm already there. Whatever experience I have, I'm already there. There's no getting away from me. No matter what my mind is doing, no matter what it's feeling, no matter what emotions are there, it can never get away from me, and I am always the same. So for Jnani, if you're having some problem out here, if your mind's getting carried away, just bring it back. Bring it home to the truth. It's very, very simple. So that really the pala, so we'll see now, the pala of this knowledge, it's twofold. The prime pala means the result, the fruit of gaining this knowledge is twofold. There's the primary gain of moksha is the recognition of the changeless, unalterable wholeness of my being, my own nature. The desha kala vastu aparicheda, of the conscious being that I am, which is limitless. There's that pala. The secondary pala is that my mind relaxes now. So the tight, the ups and downs, the sukha dukkha of the mind resolves to a great deal. Because I'm not asking the world to be a source of happiness for me. I already have that source of happiness. So my mind doesn't have the type of ups and downs or stress that it had when I had projected that happiness onto the world. So that's the secondary gain. So these verses, these last three verses, in a sense, they're a praise. In this verse, verse 18, what the verse says is this. So think of Krishna talking while he says, because aham, because I am atitaha, I am beyond, I am beyond the kshara purusha. So he says, yasmat ksharam atitaha aham. I am beyond the kshara, that which is continually changing. This is an upadhi for me. It's a conditioning adjunct. It's mithya. My being is immanent and transcendent. It means I'm the very conscious being which this all enjoys, but I'm free of it also. I'm totally free of it. I'm its self, but I'm free of it. Just think of clay pot. The pot totally depends on the clay, and the clay is totally free of the pot. I am the very being of all of this, but I'm totally free of it. And he says, aksharat api chotamaha. And also, I am completely beyond, completely uttama, superior, innermost, and beyond the akshara. My maya, maya is maya. Maya has itself, whether even in causal condition, it has no being apart from me. Maya is maya. Maya is mithya. Mithya means whether it's ajnanam, ignorance in unmanifest condition, causal condition, it still has no being. It has no being independent of consciousness, of conscious being. That is the very nature of mithya. So if this manifest creation has no independent being, its unmanifest condition also has no independent being. So maya, even though it's beginningless, it has no, it's a different order of reality. You know, to just kind of understand, right now as a jiva, so much of your knowledge right now is in unmanifest condition. But you, when you manifest it, if I ask you to think of a pine tree, immediately whatever your knowledge of pine tree is will come into manifestation. And that manifestation is something which is very temporal. The pine tree manifestation can last for a few seconds, and okay, I'll say, okay, don't think about it anymore. Think about something else, you know. Think about a sunflower. Okay, so now the pine tree, that's gone, okay? That's gone. But the unmanifest pine tree is not gone. I can ask you to think of it again. Right? At any time I can ask you. So the unmanifest is there, right? In unmanifest condition. But in terms of its being, the being that it enjoys is still the same Satchit. The unmanifest Maya is beginningless, but it's not a second thing that has a separate existence apart from the conscious being which you are. So now say if I ask you, imagine a beautiful meadow. And you see yourself walking in the meadow. Okay, so now you've imagined your own little meadow universe. And so you have everything in unmanifest condition that can allow you to bring that into manifestation. Everything in that manifestation is continually changing, and you can resolve the whole manifestation. But this Maya that allows you to do that itself is not going to go away. Right? I can say you imagine a beautiful tree, and I ask, well, you know, let's burn the tree. So the poor tree is now burning. And I say, well, let's not burn the tree anymore. Pull it back. You know? Now, imagine it again without burning. Okay, so now you reimagine the tree. This time you're not going to let the tree burn. It's all, so that the imagination is something very, very temporal, but its causal condition, its unmanifest condition, is not. But that doesn't make Ajnanam or Maya from the total thing. It doesn't make it real in the same sense as conscious being is real. Because it has no substance apart from conscious being. Just like your mind right now, it has no substance apart from conscious being. But it's so powerful. What you can do with that mind is something amazing. That's the power, the Shakti, the Maya Shakti. So that Maya Shakti, on a total level, is what we call Ishvara. So conscious being, Maya has no being apart from conscious one. That's Yama Iti Maya, that which has no being at all apart from conscious being. That Maya is so incredibly powerful. It's powerful from the standpoint of what it can do. The Maya that you have at your capacity is incredible. You know, especially incredible for the creatures or the beings that are contained within it. Like if you have a dream, you're the creator, you're the Ishwara of that dream. If you have an imagination, you're the Ishwara of the imagination. For you, it's just natural. Like if I say, imagine a universe. Oh, okay. Imagine, boom, you've imagined the universe. And for you, maybe, it's probably for Ishwara, this is not a big deal. Right? It's natural. Right? It's natural. But the beings within the imagined universe who are limited are looking around, you know, with their limited power, what we call ulpa, their ulpa shakti, their limited power. They're limited. Each jiva within this creation has limited amount of maya. You get to imagine, and you get to dream. You have your limited little Ishwaras within the total. So it's a very amazing condition. So say as this whole thing, as one starts to really understand the relationship of this whole creation to your being, your mind holds your being, the whole thing, in wonder, enjoying Ishwara, the Ishwara of this creation, you know, and enjoying the Maya of this creation, and enjoying the stability and changelessness and wholeness of your own being. That's Ajnani. That's what Ajnani is. So here, of course, these verses are being taught by Krishna, who's the Lord, who's the Ishwara in manifest condition, you know, taken as an avatar. So what he's saying, he says here, because I am, you know, free of both Kshara, I'm beyond the Kshara, and I'm beyond the Akshara. I am Uttamaha. I am the one who is Uttamaha. Means Desha Kala Vastu Aparicheda. I'm free of all the limitations, but I am the Kshara. He uses these terms. I'm the Kshara Purusha. Means I am me. I am the self who is all of this. And I am the self who has the unmanifest Maya. I am that one. And I am the one who is free of it all. That's the Uttama Purusha. So then he says, therefore, I am praised, Pratitaha. I am praised in the world by all the poets, Shankara says. I am continually praised. My who I am, my being is continually praised in the world and in the Vedas. Loke Vedecha. Loke means in the world, means within this creation. I'm continually being praised, and I'm continually praised in the Vedas. I'm the very subject matter of the Vedas, right? So I'm continually praised. Pratita means really, I'm continually being praised, but I'm also being taught, I'm being talked about, I'm the object of great discussion, you know, in the lokas, in all of the lokas, in the Vedas, and pratitaha, I am talked about in what as who, in what form, as Purushottamaha. So he's introducing this term Purushottamaha, the one who is the supreme, for what a bit lack of a better word, the Purushottama, the one who is infinite in my being, and the self of all of this, and at the same time free of all of this. I'm the Purushottama, right? Who is free, who is the self, the Kshara Purusha. I'm the Kshara Purusha, I'm the Akshara Purusha, and I'm the Uttama Purusha, means that I'm the one who is free of all of them. Right? Om Mandukya Upanishad. I'm Virat, I'm the self of this physical creation. I'm the Hiranyagarbha, I'm the self of the subtle creation. You know, I'm Ishwara, I'm the self that has the Maya Upadi. And then I am just the Atma, the self that is infinite, just pure consciousness. So this is what's said here. I'm the self of all of this, and I'm free of all of this. That's the Satya Mitya relationship. And so then he goes, Yo mam evam sammudaha, Yo mam evam sammudaha, Janati purushottamam, Janati purushottamam, Sasarva vidpajati mam, Sasarva vidpajati mam, Sarva pavena parata, Sarva pavena parata. So now he's talking, in this verse, he's talking about the one who is the pala for the one who knows this, who understands this knowledge. So he says, yaha mam evam asammudaha janati purushottamam sasarvavid bhajati mam sarvabhavena bharata. He who yaha mam, me, evam, in this manner, asam mudaha, being no longer deluded. Muda means deluded. Sam muda means really deluded. Very, very completely deluded. Samyak mudaha. I'm clearly, fully deluded. Sam mudaha. Being asam, the one who is asam mudaha, no longer deluded. He, that person, being no longer deluded, who knows Janati, knows mam, me, evam, in this manner. So, yaha mam evam asammudaha janati. He who is no longer deluded, who knows me in this manner as Purushottama.
What is Janati?
He who knows. Comes from nya. Janati is third person singular. Mm-hmm. Nya becomes Janati. Okay?
Janati.
So, yaha janati, he who knows mam, me, evam, in this manner, yaha asammudaha, he who is not deluded, asammudaha, he being not deluded, janati, knows me, mam, evam, in this way, as Purushottamam. He who knows mam, me, as Purushottamam, as the Purushottama, in this manner. He who knows me as itself, which is infinite, that one, saha, that one who is now a sarvavit, that one is a sarvavit. He now knows, as well knows, everything. When we say he's a sarvavit, this one who knows in this manner, he knows everything. In the sense that, if I think of the, as an example, the ocean, the infinite ocean, right? If I recognize that the truth of the ocean is water, I as well know the entire water, because the entire ocean, because I know what it is. Like that, all of these nama rupas, all of these names and forms, I, as a jiva with limited sense organs and mind, I'm not going to know, have knowledge of all of the nama rupas, of all of the names and forms in the whole creation, but I know what they are. They're one Satchit Ananda, which is my own self. So that person, in that sense, he is a Sarvavit. That person who is a Sarvavit, a knower of all, knowing as well as, just as another example, if you know gold, you know all gold ornaments, because they're all gold. That's what they actually are. The nama rupa is mithya, so you know what is actually there. So that one, he becomes a Sarvavit, and that one who is a Sarvavit, Bhajati, he gains mommy. That one who is a Sarvavit, he gains me. How? Sarvabhavena, by being the self of all. Actually, Sarvabhava, which means is the Sarvatma. Sarvabhava means he gains me because he is the very being. He is the very being, the Satchit, of everything that is there. So he gains me. I am you, in fact. There's nothing that I am not. Right? Because there is only one, the Purushottama is only one being that transcends the whole Maya. All nama rupas have for their being the Purushottama. But the Purushottama, the conscious being, which is the Pratyekatma, which is your own being, is the one self which in which all of these mitya, all of these things, the Kshara Purusha and the Akshara Purusha, enjoy as their very self. So here he says, the one who's no longer deluded, he gains me as that Purushottama. And he, now being a Sarvavit, one who knows as well knows everything, he gains me as being the self of all that is. Because that is the nature of Ishvara. That's the nature of the Purushottama, the self of everything. The self of everything is not going to exclude the Supadi, right? The Atma, the self of this, the self of this, the self of you, the self of you, the self of Ishvara is the self of me. There's only one non-dual self that is free of desha, not limited by space, not limited by objects, not limited by kala, not limited by time, and yet the self of all of these things. That's the Satya Mithya. So what do I have to recognize in terms of my own experience as a jiva, as an individual here? As an individual here, with these sense organs and mind, right, and this physical body, which allows me to know and have a subject-object relationship within this creation, I have to recognize indwelling, as a sense, if I can use that word, in this upadi, this body-mind sense organs, the Purushottama, the conscious being, the me, the conscious being that is me, that is not subject to change at all, is not subject to desha, is not subject to kala, is not subject to any type of objectification, right? Which is the very conscious being which I cannot objectify, make into an object. You cannot make your consciousness, the conscious being that you are, into an object for you to look at. Subject, you can't have a subject-object relationship with consciousness. Consciousness, the conscious being that you are, is self-evident. It shines like the sun, so to speak. The sun doesn't need to bring in another sun to light it up so that it can be known. It lights itself up by its own luminosity. Consciousness doesn't need another consciousness to come in and light it up. It is conscious being. The conscious being, and conscious being is. If it's not objectifiable, it's not subject to time and space and change. It's not an object within this dream. Ishvara's manifestation, it's not an object to be subject to time and space, to be limited. It's totally free of those limitations, so it's not divided. So this me that you are is not divided into parts, like you're a me, and you're a me, and you're a me, and you're a me. There's one me, there's one me, and this one me, you know, is the self of this whole creation and every jiva in it. So the me that is me is the me that is you, is the me that is Ishwar. There's only one me. And the me-ness belongs to the me, not to the upadhi. And that's why it's not like your upadhi, your body, mind, sense organs, is giving you the sense of me. The sense of me belongs to the me. It belongs to consciousness. So you get rid of the entire creation and what is left is me. When you wake up from a dream, all the dream characters are enjoying me, 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 me. But when you wake up from the dream, what is left is me. The me, the self that you are, has nothing to do with this, but this totally enjoys it completely. This, the me, the conscious being that you are, this whole creation is totally dependent on it for its existence and for its consciousness. You know? But I'm not dependent on it. It's two orders of reality. Mithya depends upon the satyam, upon what actually exists. And what actually exists is me. So I am the Purushottama. Right? I am that Purusha, the one who is Uttama. Means I'm the self of all of this and I'm free of all of this also. That you need to discover. And you need to be able, this is why the whole teaching really depends upon your viveka. Viveka means for your mind has to recognize that it itself is objectified. The mind itself is known. Sense organs are known. The world is known. So who is the me, you know, the conscious being that is lighting all of this up? You have to recognize it. You know, you have to recognize yourself as the one who's not changing at all, because you're there to be recognized. That's why that Vedanta is not intellectual. It's certainly, the mind can certainly make sense of it all, and it should. But the Vedanta is actually trying to make you see a fact that is there to be seen. And it's not a fact away. It's not an indirect knowledge. There's something here, you know, to be immediately, right now, recognized. It's not saying you can recognize it when you have a particular mental state, the spectrum. Let's get way out here into the bliss field, and then you can recognize it. You know what? That is not true. That is not true. What you need, when we talk about antakarana shuddhi, this big word, purity of mind, that has all kinds of baggage attached to it in the West. Purity of mind means, for in Vedanta, that your mind is such that it wants to know this and it has enough shanti to be able to listen. You can think that's not a big thing, but for some people that would be a very big thing. Like, for instance, say you have no mumukshutvam, you're not interested. Mm. And then somebody brings you to class and you have to sit there for God knows how long, for an hour, and they're talking about something that you have no interest in. So the mumukshutvam is very important. You know, and also a certain amount of vairagya. Vairagya means that you already, or if you have the mumukshutvam, you'll have a certain amount of vairagya, means a certain amount of dispassion, where you don't have this burning desire to have this and have this and have this, because you've already realized it doesn't really work. And so your mind has a certain freedom that allows it to relax, to be present, because this knowledge is something that takes place, you know, over time through the use of words. Your mind, these words have to kind of land on a mind that's present to see what's being said. So you have to have enough antakarana shuddhi for your mind to be available. If you have somebody, a master like Swamiji, he makes your mind available during the... Even if the mind has all kinds of problems and whatnot, and he will crack enough jokes, you know, and say things in a certain way to get your mind in a kind of a mood, you know, of peace and shanti, and kind of a, what he'll call like a gay abandon, You know, just a freedom, a creative freedom in your mind. And then it'll pop this in. Because your mind's, you'll make the mind available. So he creates a mumukshu, that antakarana shuddhi, in the mind. Then this knowledge comes in and kind of acts as, you know, like an antibody or something. I don't know how to say that, but it gets implanted in there, and then it starts working away at all of the little problems and things, and helps the mind to mature. But the mind has to have a certain amount of maturity to even be interested to listen at all. You know, so that antakarana shuddhi really is just your mind is available. People don't really understand that the antakarana shuddhi, your mind is available, and then it matures, becomes more and more available, more and more free of raga, dvesha, these likes and dislikes and all that, because once you recognize your own, the source of ananda, the likes and dislikes lose, they become more mitya, put it that way. They become mitya. They don't hold you hostage. They're no longer the bondage. When we use this word bondage, it really has to do with the ignorance, the self-ignorance that causes these raga dveshas to act like bondages. Yeah. It's all caused by ignorance. So, we have one more verse. We'll do it next time. Let's take just a moment. Om Purnamadah Purnamidam Purnat Purnamadachyate Purnasya Purnamadaya Purnameva Vashishyate Om Shanti 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 Harihi Om Shri Guru Pyo Namaha Harihi Om.
It's the same question that keeps coming up for me with this stuff. But you talked about use an example of the pine tree.
Uh-huh.
And I think you used to illustrate the akshara.
Yes.
And how that's Maya, and which is also referred to as Ishvara sometimes.
Yeah.
But what throws me off about this is, so that you can imagine a pine tree, you can also imagine the son of a barren woman. I mean, even things that are supposedly non-existent. You can imagine almost anything.
Yeah.
And
that would be, just an aside, that would be making improper use of an illustration, actually. But go ahead.
Right.
Yeah.
I know.
Yeah, okay.
I know. But I'm wanting to expand the context of mm-hmm. things that can be imagined, because
mm-hmm.
they even include things that are tuchum. I mean, you can do that with almost anything.
No, that's not correct. They're not tuchum in your imagination, right?
Okay.
That's an imaginal field. So that's what I'm trying to say, that like I could take any type of situations and put them together in my imagination that don't really exist in that combination in the physical world. But when I'm imagining it, then in the imaginal world, that is. So when I use an example like son of a barren woman or a rabbit, that the horn of a rabbit, these illustrations are only good to make you think about the something that is not there. So tuchum actually is just going to be a concept that is meant to be helpful for for you to differentiate between that which is, as satya, means never comes, never goes out of being, it's free from time, versus something that has no, that is not no being. That mitya is in between here. Because it's not satyam, but we experience it, so you can't say it doesn't exist.
Okay.
That's all it's for.
Okay. Well, okay, leaving that aside.
Okay.
There's the pine tree can be imagined, and then it's you're thinking about a pink elephant with purple polka dots or something. Then you go back to the pine tree, and then there's the burning and all. You seem to be saying that the pine tree has some, when it's not being imagined, that there's some either potential existence or it's an unmanifest condition that somehow the pine tree exists even when it's not being imagined.
Yeah.
And that's where I don't see how you get it.
Yeah, yeah, okay. You know why you don't see it? It's because, probably, let me just say what I think. We think that this is a physical reality. Right? That this is a real chair. Like in the dream also, the dream character could say, this is a real chair. It's got weight, you know. It's heavy. And if I pinch, I'm a dream character, I pinch myself, it hurts. So this is real matter, okay? But from the standpoint of Maya itself, as that which projects the entire creation, that's why Swamiji has started calling this creation on subtle and physical level as manifest knowledge. Because when you say manifest knowledge, this idea of matter goes away. Matter, the word matter, is only something that has a reality really within this particular loka. Now, and it would have a reality also, like say in a dream, to the dream character, then these things we would call this matter, right? But if you're looking at it from the standpoint of Maya, think of it as manifest knowledge on a total level. Then this idea of the concretization of this creation, which we experience here, that goes away. Not the laws don't go away, the order that we experience, how our five senses relate to all of this, that doesn't go away. So within this physical creation, we call it matter. But from the standpoint of Maya, of the conscious being, and the manifestation of this, then the concept of matter that you have within it is a little different. You know, it's a little... It's a concretization of Maya in a way that may be limiting to you when you try to imagine the whole creation coming into manifestation.
Part of the problem is I don't understand what Maya is. That's kind of what I'm getting at. I don't know what is Maya? Because Maya is the Supadi.
Yeah, you don't understand what it is.
Yeah, I don't understand what Maya is. Yeah. It seems like, to me, just to give you a sense of where my knowledge is at with Maya, that it's sort of like, oh, believe that, you know, in Jesus as a... That's what it's where I'm at with it. It's a belief. I don't get that there's any correlation in my world to...
Yeah, okay. Beliefs. I don't think I can solve your problem tonight, but I can tell... I can tell you a few things in the direction that we'll go, okay? First of all, you have to start with the reality as you experience it. This reality, this world that we experience through our five sense organs, okay? So now, this world that we experience can be broken down, I can break it down into overarching components. Like I can break this world down into the five elements and their elementals in terms of the names and forms that we experience, right? And so in terms of the names and forms that we experience, I can say that this is made of the five elements themselves are made of what we would call tamas, only in the sense that they give the impression of solidity, right? We would call matter this tamas that we experience, you would call it as matter. And if I want to break this matter into its components in over an overarching way, we say, okay, let's call this matter, or we'll call it tamas, and we will break it into the whole experience that we're having, into the five elements, space, air, fire, water, earth, and their elementals. Okay, so we say all matter, we're just going to look at, instead of going into atoms and quarks, we're just going to take this creation and say, okay, everything that we're experiencing here are the five elements and combinations thereof for the five elements. So what we're doing is looking at the reality that we experience. Then we'll say also, another thing that's included in this reality, just on the physical level and on the subtle level both, is that there's continual motion. Well, you might call it energy. There's continual motion and activity. Okay, so that energy or that power of movement, we'll call that power of movement rajas, you know. And you can break it into all different kinds of movement, but that there is motion at all, we'll give that the name motion, or we'll give that the name energy, or we'll give that the name rajas. Okay, so still we're only identifying what we're experiencing, okay? Then we're going to look and say, now, also what we're experiencing here that exists in this creation is that we have sense organs that allow us to perceive this world. We have the five sense organs. They become that what allows us to perceive it. So we have to account for that. And so these five sense organs seem to enjoy consciousness, where inert matter and even motion doesn't seem to enjoy consciousness. So we're saying these things that seem to enjoy consciousness, the five sense organs, then we have to say the mind also, which makes sense of what the perceptions are. The mind and these sense organs, they enjoy consciousness as opposed to a chair. So let's call that which enjoys consciousness sattva, right? And what is it that enjoys consciousness? We'll say the mind and the sense organs enjoy consciousness. And then if we have a concept of Ishvara, the whole creation is known, we'll say there's an overarching sattva that enjoys consciousness, there's an overarching total rajas that allows for total motion, and there's a manifest tamas that allows for name and form and all of that. So, thinking of it like this, if you think of Maya like this, we are taking the manifest creation that includes the physical world, the energetic world, even that would be like the prana, what energizes the body and what energizes the whole world. And then we're looking also at the knowership. So both the subject and the object are included in this way that this Maya is delineated as sattva, rajas, and tamas. And then we look at the nature of this creation. Right, this is we're analyzing it so that you can kind of understand where they're coming from. The nature of this creation that we are now looking at as sattva, rajas, and tamas, and then the five elements and the elementals and that which and the energy and the conscious and the knowership and all of that. We notice that everything in this creation is subject to coming into being and going out of being. And that's the nature of change. Everything. It's subject to negation. And so if everything in this creation is subject to negation, subject to birth and death, then by definition, it is mithya. That's the order of reality. By definition, it's mithya because it's subject to change. So with that, what does that mean? Is that every single thing in this creation enjoys this order of reality that we call mithya. What is the cause of mithya going to be, of this creation which has the order of reality of mithya? Its cause also is going to have to be mithya. Right? And that which causal, which is mithya, is what we call maya. So this creation that we call mithya, its causal condition would be called maya. Because what do you mean maya? Ya ma iti maya. That which is not, that is maya. So that which, when we analyze it, has no independent being, that is Maya. And so where does this Maya exist?
Does it exist? How do you get that there is a cause?
How you get that there is a cause is, like, say, how do you get that it's cyclical, for instance? That's simply from the Shastra. You have no means of knowledge for whether it's cyclical or not cyclical. But it comes from the Shastra, and it makes sense because it follows patterns within the creation. So once you understand kind of the whole vision that it has to give, then it makes sense. But you have to get the vision of it first. You know?
But does
you can't prove, you can't even, without the Shastra, you can't establish Ishvara. You can say this, there's this whole creation, this whole infinite creation. How do you know that it's Ishvara? How do you know that it's cyclical? Once the Shastra, as the Shastra unfolds it to you, it makes sense, and nothing else really makes sense. That's the thing. The knowledge that it has to give you, it makes sense, and any other position you take doesn't really make sense. Any other position is negatable. And so you bring in all of your objections, and they're easily negated, kind of like pushing over. An example they use, actually, which I kind of like, it's like a doubt that you might have is as easy to negate as blowing a feather off of your... And if I put a feather on my fingers and I go, blow it away. That's how much strength the doubts that you might have. They don't have strength.
So
but
this...
then, with this knowledge, the knowledge that it has to give, it fits in so many different ways, you know? That for your mind tries to negate it, but anything it comes up with to negate can't hold water. You know, so you try to negate the Shastra, let's put it this way, this is the Mandukya also, in the Vaitetya Prakaranam. You try to establish duality, and you can't. Once you realize that you can't, and because you discover here you can't establish duality, because we experience duality, it becomes mitya, right? Something that is mitya, if it is mitya, needs to have an adhishtana that itself is. You can't have the adhishtana of something that is mitya itself be mitya.
The adhishtana is Brahman, not Maya.
Is Brahman, right?
Yeah.
Exactly.
So why do you need a Maya? It's like an extra thing.
Because we experience it.
How? Well, but you're saying it's from the Shastra.
No. Okay. Well, I've got to start from a different level.
Okay.
I can't do it tonight.
Okay.
It's too much. It's totally doable, but I have to start from... I have to build up the words for you a little bit more.
Okay.
That's not a problem. It just takes time. Say that one last question that you were just saying.
So it makes sense to me. I can get with the program for that mitya needs to have an adhishtana, and that adhishtana is Brahman.
Right. Remember,
but
mitya is not a thing.
What does it have to do with Maya?
This is a good question. This is often what is misunderstood. Mitya is not a thing. It's an order of reality. Satyam is not a thing. It's an order of reality. So if I say something is satyam, it means that that thing, whatever it is that I'm saying is satyam, that thing is not subject to negation in past, present, or future. That's its order of reality. It's a word just talking about the order of reality of something. It's not a thing in itself. The only thing that fits the word satyam as an order of reality is Brahman. There is nothing else that can never be negated. Only Brahman. So the only thing that enjoys this order of reality is Brahman. Now, this world that we experience can never be called satyam. We have to call this world that we experience as mitya, because Everything in this world, everything about it, is subject to birth and death on every level. It's subject to change. So it will not, you can't say that it enjoys any type of absolute being or absolute reality, because it comes into being and goes out of being. So it's bordered by non-existence. But we can't say it doesn't exist because we experience it, right? That's why we can't say it's tucham. We can't say it's not here, because here we are experiencing it. So we say it is mitya. Mitya, like the snake on the rope. Like the pot in the clay. It's mitya. Means for the being that it enjoys is Brahman. The being it enjoys has to be that which actually is. And that which actually is Brahman. So Brahman is the adhishtana of mitya. Right? So now, what is going to be the cause, the upadana karana, the material cause of maya? What is going to be the material cause of this whole manifest creation that we have realized is mitya? That it has no being of its own, because everything in it comes into being and goes out of being, so it doesn't have any independent reality, because it's all, everything about it is bordered by non-existence. So what is the being that this enjoys is Brahman, but then what is its cause? What's the cause of this mitya creation that we're experiencing? This creation that enjoys the order of reality of mitya. What is the cause of this display? We say the cause, we give the name for this, the cause of this, as maya. What does maya mean? Yama iti maya. That which is not, that is maya. Because as we analyze this on every level, subtle and physical level, there's nothing here. Everything you think is something breaks down. It has a prior non-existence and a posterior non-existence. And not only that, if you analyze it, it's made of parts. It's just names within names within names within names. There is nothing here. But here we are. That's why we say it's mitya. It's mitya because it has no independent being. If you analyze it, you can't find it. You can't find a thing here upon analysis. And so that's what makes it mitya. But say we want to say, well, what's the material cause of all of this?
What does that mean when you say the word cause?
Material cause. Like, what's the material cause of a pot? Is clay. What's the material cause of a chair? It's the leather and the foam. And, you know, what goes in? Where does it come from? What kind of material does it come from?
What is it made of?
What's it made of? What is this made of? Say it's made of maya. It's just a word to... It's made of something, right?
I thought it was made of satya, rajas, and tamas.
Maya is sattva, rajas, and tamas. Sattva, rajas, and tamas are the three components, the three strands of maya. Maya is sattva, rajas, and tamas. Sattva, rajas, and tamas is maya. Maya is just one word. This one word contains these three components, sattva, rajas, and tamas. The maya, which is sattva, rajas, and tamas, when it comes into manifestation, manifests as the five elements. The sattva aspect, the rajas aspect, and the tamas aspect of the five elements. Then we get into this thing that we call the panchakarana, the whole creation story. But maya is the name for, as a material cause, for sattva, rajas, and tamas. This is why we say upadana karana means material cause. Brahman, which is what is actually here, as the adhishtana, is vivarta upadana karana. It's the sat chit ananda, which is vivarta, the material cause which itself undergoes no change at all to become the effect. So the conscious being that I am, as the purushottama, is the conscious being which this creation enjoys. It's undergone no change whatsoever. It's free of any type of modification or change. It's free of time, free of space, etc. But it's the very being that this creation enjoys. Maya, what is its as the upadana karana? What do we call it? The parinama upadana karana. The material cause, that which from which the thing is made, so maya is that material cause, the thing from which the creation is made, if you want to say, which is parinama, means which goes through a process of modification. Parinama means modifies. Sattva, rajas, and tamas go through infinite modifications to become this creation. Right? And so the maya is the, and the maya being, it's mitya, means it has no independent being. It is comprised of sattva, rajas, and tamas. It manifests as this creation, and therefore the maya is a parinama upadana karana. It goes through modifications to become this creation. The creation is continually changing, continually modifying. So what is it that's responsible? What is responsible for this display of modification is maya, which is the parinama upadana karana. So upadana, material, karana, cause, parinama, modifies, that which modifies. It changes.
So you talk about maya as the cause of mitya, right?
No. But, go ahead, see what you mean. Because remember, mitya is not a thing.
Oh, that's right, okay.
Maya is the cause for the manifestation of the creation. It goes from unmanifest to manifest. Maya because it's unmanifest, manifest. So remember cause, we're not talking about what we call the nimitta karana, the efficient cause.
Mm-hmm.
We're talking about the material. What's the material of all of this duality that we're experiencing? Is maya. That maya is mitya.
Because I've always, and I guess I've been unclear on this, because to me, I thought, and I guess maybe this isn't correct, that just as you'd say, the only thing that is satcham is Brahman.
Right.
So that which is mitya is maya.
That's fine.
Is that fine?
Yes. Okay. As long as you know what you mean by mitya.
Mm-hmm.
Is that it has no independent existence.
Right.
So then, say we want to break down, in terms of this creation, what falls under the mitya or the maya? So we've got Brahman on this up here, because it's Brahman, the satyam. And then we have the tuchim, that which isn't there, and we have everything in the middle. So everything in the middle would be what we call the vyavaharika satyam.
Mm-hmm.
Means empirical reality, the shared reality. That's from maya. Its order of reality is mitya. Then we have the pratibhasika.
Mm-hmm.
Pratibhasika satyam is that existence, subjective reality. That also is mitya. So vyavahara, pratibhasika, the shared reality, the projected subjective reality, that falls into the category of mitya. What is its material? Is maya. The only thing that's, anything that exists in duality is maya.
It just seems funny to talk about the cause of something that neither exists nor does not exist.
Yeah, with the cause is also mitya. Think of it as material cause.
Yeah, okay.
Not as
but the material cause. There doesn't exist or... Not
that the material is mitya.
Okay.
We have to talk about it because we experience it.
Okay.
You have to talk about deep sleep because you experience it. It's part of our experience. But when in the deep sleep state, there's no subject, there's no object, there's no duality being experienced.
Mm-hmm.
But when we awake from the deep sleep state, we discuss it.
Mm-hmm.
Right? When we awake from the dream, we discuss it. Right, so it's part of the waking, dream, and deep sleep are part of the experience.
Okay.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah. And so if there's a causal condition to this, then we have to discuss that too. There's a causal, good dream is like a causal, or if you don't like causal, say unmanifest. The reason we would use the word causal is because it goes into an unmanifest condition and the same thing comes out. You know, and so if you want to say, this goes into unmanifest condition. We have the word for that, avyakta, right? Avyakta means, vyakta means manifest, avyakta means unmanifest. But think of causal as material cause.
Mm-hmm.
Like material.
Yeah, because we usually think of cause as being different than the effect. Whereas in
exactly.
This sense, it's not any different than the effect. Okay.
But it's the official causal song, right? I mean, it's
there is a nimitta karana. When you bring in the... See, we have upadana karana and nimitta karana. Nimitta karana means the efficient cause. So we talk about Ishwara as both the upadana karana and the nimitta karana for this creation. So that would mean is consciousness plus the maya upadi, right, is response as the becomes the nimitta karana. There's no nimitta karana without the maya upadi, because Brahman is not doing anything. And so when we're talking about the cause for the creation as being Ishwara, we bring in consciousness with the maya. That's nimitta karana, that's Ishwara. You have to think now, you have to think of this maya upadi. And once we say maya upadi, whose upadi is it? It's Brahman's upadi. So Ishwara is Brahman with the maya upadi. That's what Ishwara is. If we're just saying Brahman, we're just looking at the reality of Ishwara. You know, the satyam of Ishwara, the self of Ishwara. But Ishwara is that Brahman taking into account the maya upadi. That's Ishwara. Ishwara is both the nimitta and upadana karana. Nimitta because conscious being. Upadana karana because the nimitta karana is the upadana karana in this case, because without maya there is no Ishwara. Ishwara, so that's why this creation is Ishwara. You know, the subtle realm, that's why we say the subtle realm of the creation is Hiranyagarbha. That's a name for Ishwara. So there is nothing but Ishwara. Yeah. That, again, is why Swamiji calls this whole thing as manifest knowledge. Because then you can kind of understand. If you think of to manifest your knowledge, say you manifest, that's why I say, think of a meadow, or think of a tree, or think of a, you know, your home, or just anything, it's all manifest knowledge. Now think of infinite manifest knowledge, where there's no limitation, there's no ajnanam. That's Ishwara. That helps you to understand this whole thing. If you use manifest knowledge, infinite manifest knowledge, you understand this whole thing as Ishwara, as a conscious being. That's why when we say Purushottama, Purusha means a person. That's the word. Purusha means a person. The Uttama Purusha is that person, the conscious being that is infinite. The conscious being that is infinite. And that conscious being, you are. But when we say yourself, your being is infinite, but when we take in the whole maya upadi, the jiva, is within the maya upadi. The body, mind, sense organs are within the maya upadi. Ishwara is the maya upadi. Brahman plus the maya upadi. And you are, the jiva, is part of Ishwara, like a part to the whole. And so as you understand this, the knowledge starts clicking in. Your being, the being that you are, the self that you are, is Ishwara. There's only one self. But so this creation is, it's your creation. It's not somebody else's creation from the standpoint of you, the Atma. This is yours. This is you. You know, you, in fact, are Ishwara from the standpoint of the self. If you are identified with this body, mind, sense organs, then you, the body, mind, sense organs, are part of Ishwara. But from the standpoint of you, your being, the conscious being, you are Ishwara. You, the Brahman, the self that you are, you're the one that has this maya, beginningless maya. This beginningless maya manifests as the whole creation, and within that manifestation are all of these jivas, and here you happen to be identified with them, but in reality, you are Ishwara, and you're also, because this jiva is here, you're also the jiva. You're the whole thing. And that's why the dream illustration is so helpful. Because when you dream, like if I say, well, in your dream, you're both the whole dream and you're also identified with a character. You don't have any problem with being the whole dream. And notice also, in a dream, you're not always identified with anything in the dream. Sometimes you're not identified with a character, you're just the whole scene. And even within one dream, sometimes you're the whole setting. And sometimes you're not, there's a lot of people in the dream, but you're not identified with any one of them. They're all part of the scenery. And sometimes you're identified with a character in the dream, and you're experiencing the dream from the eyes of the character, right? And notice this. You have no problem whatsoever from going to being the character to being the whole, and back and forth and back and forth. It's perfectly natural. You don't even think about it. You don't think, I've lost my body. You don't think like that, you know? You also don't think about anything when you go into deep sleep, and the whole creation and the subject-object relationship is in totally unmanifest condition. In fact, you look forward to it. Swamiji always jokes about that. You know how we make our bed so nice and everything and cuddle up and let's blot out the whole universe, including me. The whole, you know, all the problems, let's blot out the mind, let's out all identifications, just, we're so happy to do that. Because really, the whole creation is an avyekta from the individual standpoint. The whole creation is an unmanifest condition. And who is left? Me, Brahman. Without anything in the way, you know, to speak, so to speak, because that ajnanam is still there. But I don't, like Swamiji will say, total ignorance is bliss. It's just partial ignorance that's the problem. Totally, total ignorance is no problem. No limitation.
I mean, one problem, I think one thing that's difficult for us, or for me anyway, what has been, is just even to really get this thing about Maya being beginninglessness. Because I think in the West, you know, we are very historically oriented, right?
That's true.
So then you have to posit there was a beginning to everything, which means there had to be nothing before there was something, et cetera, et cetera. This is a different vision, a very different vision.
But you have to think about it this logically. Mm-hmm. Who's going to create Maya? And seriously.
Mm-hmm.
That's my question. What's the upadana karana for Maya?
Maya is the upadana.
No. Right, there isn't one. Or no. Maya is the upadana karana for mitya, or for...
For the manifestation
for the
of the creation.
Yeah.
There
but
is
what
no...
is the upadana karana for Maya? And the answer is no, there isn't one.
No, right? Except... No, that's true. But what you have to do then is go to the... What is its reality? Is that what's the adhishtana of Maya? What is the reality of Maya is Brahman. Then you say, what is the upadana karana for Satchit, for conscious being? That is... What is that? What is? There is nothing else that is. There's no. Otherwise, you go into an infinite regress. Like, what is the upadana karana for existence itself, for being itself? There is no upadana karana. It is the upadana karana, and has no parts, and it's not subject to change. And so, if there is Maya, which itself has no. You can't establish any being for it. It has
That's
for its being Brahman, but Brahman doesn't have any hands and legs, you know, to create it. It doesn't have a mind. You know, from the standpoint of Brahman, there's just pure, non-dual, conscious being that is timeless.
Why couldn't you say, though, that Brahman is the upadana karana for Maya as well as the...
In that world, and yes, you can.
Because it's the Adhishtana.
The Vartha Upadana Karana.
The Vartha Upadana Karana, yeah.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
Okay.
Then we do say that.
Okay.
Yeah.
Why not just say that Brahman is the Upadana Karana for the manifest world? Why have Maya in the middle?
Everything in the manifest world comes into being and goes out of being because it's subject to change, right? So it's just a way of accounting for what is actually here. Everything here comes into being and goes out of being. That's its nature. Everything here is bound by time. It's one manifest, you know, bunch of laws, but everything is in continual flux. So there's a, what is the substance of all of this that we're experiencing?